Well, greetings and salutations, everybody. Welcome to my YouTube channel. My name is John Campia, and this is a companion video. What are companion videos? Well, I'm awfully glad that you asked. You see, every day on the John Campia Show, Monday through Friday, we take the second half of the show to take your live questions. However, we normally don't have enough time to get caught up on all the questions that get sent in. But if you sent in those tip questions in support of this channel, I want to make sure you get your questions answered as fast as possible. So we gather up those unused questions, we address them here on companion videos. And because we did take the day off on Friday, we didn't have a John Campia Show on Friday, we are a little bit behind on our questions. So let's start giving a little bit of a remedy to that and start getting caught up, shall we? And we're going to get things started off here today with Dancing Dog 60, who writes in, I enjoyed Vin Diesel in Boiler Room. Yeah, he was really good in that. And Saving Private Ryan and other dramas. He's actually a really good actor, but all he seems to do are fast movies. Why doesn't he try to flex his acting muscles anymore instead of just his biceps, John? Is it just for the money? Well, okay, first of all, newsflash, all actors act for the money. Just like all plumbers plumb for the money. Just like all TV repairmen repair TVs for the money. It's their job. As Michael Douglas once told me, they are actors for hire. But you're right. Vin Diesel is actually a better actor than most people give him credit for. Now, you mentioned a couple of good ones. Obviously, Saving Private Ryan, Boiler Room, and he's good in those. My favorite performance of Vin Diesel, though, is in this little courtroom film he's got called Find Me Guilty. In which he actually has hair. I know it's hard to imagine Vin Diesel with hair these days, but he actually has hair. If you like Vin Diesel, you owe it to yourself to see Find Me Guilty. He's terrific in it. It's not his best movie, but I think it's his best performance. And I think it shows that he is far more than just family. Like, he's way more than that. He's actually a really legit actor. So why does he do these fast movies? Well, first of all, I think a lot of film fans just assume that if any actor is famous, they can just do whatever movie they want. And that's not true. Every movie being made has a long list of actors who would like to be in it, and the directors can only pick one per role. And the reality is, if you're doing like some like murder drama or something like that today, and you've got the option of putting Ryan Gosling in it or Vin Diesel in it, well, most directors doing that kind of movie will go for Ryan Gosling. It's just what he's suited for. And more than that, it's what he's known for. It would be a difficult sell today to put Vin Diesel in a role like that for a big studio film because the audience has come to expect Vin Diesel in Fast and the Furious movies or movies like and under that, XXX, Riddick, you know, films like that. So it's a difficult sell. Now, what he can do is take the next few years while his name's still hot and he's known for the action stuff and he's got the physique, do more of these big budget and big profit movies, and then do like what a Robert Pattinson did. Move away from that and do some indie films because indie directors and producers would love to put a big name like Vin Diesel in their films, even for more dramatic stuff. And then spend a couple of years doing those, like enlarging his reputation for the types of material he can do, and then maybe he will. So that's my take on that. And once again, if you haven't seen it, check out Find Me Guilty. All right. Thanks for that, Dancing Dog. Next up, Ryan Lohner writes, the name Wednesday comes from Woden's Day, another name for Odin. So Loki actually has taken over his father's throne. At least it wasn't Thursday, which comes from Thor. You know what? I don't know if that's factually true, but that is what I've heard before. And I'm not saying it's not true. Maybe it is. I don't know much about where the origin of the names of the week, of the days of the week came from. But if that's true, it's pretty fascinating. And again, I don't know if it's true. That's what I heard. Of course, what he means by Loki's taking over his father's day is that, of course, Loki comes out on Wednesdays now on Disney Plus. So there you go. Thanks for that, Ryan. Next up, The Sock writes, there are two O's in Doctor Strange. And there's an O in Thanos, an O in Mephisto. I see where this is going. Which means they both are going to show up in Multiverse of Madness. And because he was in an issue of X-Men for a half second, he's going to pull them in. Oh my God, we're getting X-Men. Perfect logic, The Sock. Perfect logic. At least logic as far as a lot of online fan speculations have been about these things and always looking for proof and clues and everything. That's about as good as any of them. All right, thanks for sharing that, Sock. All right, next up. Russell Amador writes, hey, John, This weekend is the release of the Fatherhood movie starring Kevin Hart, yes, on Netflix. It looks to actually be more serious in tone due to its subject matter, but I'm actually interested in it. The Hart is branching out. Any interest on this one? I don't have a lot of interest in it, and I believe it's out now, and I haven't watched it yet. What little interest I do have is specifically because of what you mentioned, Kevin Hart. Because Kevin Hart, his whole career is basically based on that one comedic shtick he has, that character he is. But I love him for it. I mean, that shtick has not gotten old yet, at least not to me. I find the dude incredibly entertaining and funny. But I do believe it's a really good thing that he branches out a little bit. Like, he did that one movie with Bryan Cranston that was the remake of the French film, and I'm struggling on the name of it right now. But even then, that was more Kevin Hart than it was the original character from the original French film. Still, to see him getting into a little bit more dramatic is a really good idea. I like that he's doing it. But seeing the previews of it, I'm not going to lie, it didn't look overly compelling to me or interesting to me. I may watch it at some point, but again, if I do, it'll just be because I like the idea that Kevin Hart is, you know, flexing his muscles a little bit and trying something different, which I always appreciate when actors do that. Okay, next up, Brandon Visconti writes, "Hey, John. So Spider-Man 3 was a failure because of the overuse of villains, correct? No, that's incorrect. Anyway, so with all these villains that are supposed to be in Spider-Man No Way Home, do you think it could suffer the same fate?" Okay, look, here's the thing about that. A lot of people, okay, what film fans do is we look for formulas. The formulas that make something good or the formula that makes something bad, right? We see this a lot in comic book films. People say, you know what would just make all the DC movies good is if they did the Marvel formula. Solo film, solo film, solo film, team film, solo film, solo, solo, solo film, team film. That's what will make the movies good. And that's bullshit. That's the formula. The formula is nothing but structural. You got to make good movies, right? You just got to make good movies. That's ridiculously hard to do, but it's as simple as that. You got to make good movies. The problem with Spider-Man 3 is not that it had too many villains, nor that there was a lot of time spent on the villains. Go to, what's the damn name of the first one? Go to Infinity War, Avengers Infinity War, right? You had like multiple villains in that. You had Thanos. You had Ebony Maw. You had Proxima Midnight. You had Corvus Glaive. You had Cull Obsidian. You had five villains in there, all who had individual fights with various Avengers and blah, blah, blah. Did Infinity War suck? Because it had too many villains. Had five villains. Infinity War must have sucked. Nope, it was great. Or go back to like the godfather of all modern comic book movies, the movie that ushered in the golden age of comic book movies today, the first X-Men movie, right? That had like a minimum four villains. You had Magneto, you had Mystique, you had Toad, you had Sabretooth, and there might have been one or two others in there too. It depends if you count the Senator or not, but at any rate, four villains. Well, by the formula, that means the movie sucked, right? No, it's a fantastic comic book movie. The problem with Spider-Man, The Amazing Spider-Man 2, was not that they had so many villains. Not even the fact that they spent a good amount of time on those villains. It's what they did with the villains. It was just a poor movie. It was just a bad movie. They could have had just one villain, and it still would have been a bad movie. Not the numerical formula of all this or how much time it's not. Do you spend time on those characters? It's what do you do with the time you're spending on those characters? You know what I'm saying? So no. And by the way, we've seen movies with tons more villains, and they can be very, very good. So am I worried about No Way Home because it looks like they've got a certain number of villains? Not at all. Look, the movie's either going to be great or it's going to be terrible or somewhere in between. But just the fact that they have a certain number of villains won't be the determining factor of that. It'll be how they use them. All right. Thanks a lot for saying that in, Brendan. All right. Next up, we've got Brendan M, who writes in like in tips in like $20. Thank you, Brendan, for supporting our channel on that level, man. One of two. Hi, John. Regarding Loki, variants looking different. Miss Minutes said the timekeepers reorganized the timeline into one, and the video shows the different timelines weaving together. Maybe the other universes weren't eliminated, but all integrated into one, where they all coexist peacefully. The sacred timeline doesn't eliminate multiverse, but it keeps them from going to war. So every universe has its correct place in the sacred timeline. Different versions of different people all have their correct paths. I see where you're going with that, Brennan, but that is not how I interpreted it at all. Let's put it this way. Going back to the timekeeper's analogy, if you take five different shirts and then take the material from those shirts and make one shirt out of it. Do you have five shirts or one shirt? You have one shirt. It was made out of the fabrics from five various shirts that no longer exist, but it was those five shirts that came to one to make the one timeline, right? See, the way I interpreted it, and listen, we still have four episodes of Loki to go, so they may give us a lot more information that'll change our opinion, but for now, I'll say that the way I interpreted it was that they didn't just snap their fingers and eliminate all the multiverses except for one. It did look like they merged them into one, but still we are left with one. One reality, one sacred timeline. And now again, more information is to come. And we could see the next episode of Loki in a day or so, and that may give a certain set of information that totally changes the way we look at that. But again, from my point of view and the way I interpret it, the way they described it, it's not like they just took all the multiverses and still kept them all separate, but now they're in harmony? It didn't say the timekeepers made peace amongst the multiverse. No, because remember, one of the things Ms. Minutes said was, if a variant happens and it's not stopped before it redlines, multiverse happens. And they're trying to stop that from happening. So why would it say that in the show if the multiverse already exists just in one timeline? Anyway, that's how I kind of see it. But again, Brennan, you never know. Like I said, they have four more episodes to go. They may give more information that'll change that, but that's where I'm at right now. But we'll see. You may very well be right, brother. You may very well be right. We'll find out. All right. Andrew writes, one of two. I need to rant. Okay, here we go. I've always bought my movies through Google Play. Me too. I have owned a Roku for years, and it was always the easiest way to do it. They recently shut that down and moved my library to YouTube. Holy cow, is the library awful on the YouTube app? Everything is lumped together with no organization whatsoever. You would think if they were going to make this move, they would have more intuitive library system for your movies. So frustrating. And I'll tell you what, man, I'm kind of with you on that. Now, look, here's the good part. The good part is once you click play on any movie, it doesn't matter whether it's through Google Play Movies or Vudu or Fandango Now or whatever it is, the movie plays and you get the same movie. So that's the good part. And it is just a UI issue. But UI is important. UI, whenever you hear that term in tech speak, it just means user interface, the thing you see and interact with to navigate an app. The UI thing, now that Google Play Movies isn't a thing and it's all been shuffled over to the YouTube library section, it's an issue. I agree with you. It is not a well-designed UI. And it's not nearly as intuitive. I had the same complaints when they shut down Google Play Music because I loved Google Play Music. I really did. But now it's YouTube Music and it's not nearly as easy to use. I don't find it as enjoyable to use. Actually, I started listening to music a lot less just because I had no fun trying to navigate that thing. So, yeah, I get your pain. I don't think it's a huge deal because once you click play, it's all, you know, academic anyway. But I get it, man. As a guy who's gotten his movies through the Google Play movie thing and have been watching his digital movies through that way for a long time, I do find the move to YouTube a little bit frustrating, but you know what? It's a simple fix. And I'm sure sooner rather than later, YouTube and Google will get on that and create a better, more easily navigable interface. And I'm sure it's coming. It's not going to be difficult for them to do. So let's just keep our fingers crossed that it'll be a lot sooner rather than later. All right. Thanks a lot for that, Andrew. And I feel your pain. All right. Next up, Scott Brown writes, One of the most annoying things I'll run into in the theater is when a guy feels the need to mansplain the entire movie to his wife and he's next to you. This happened with Knives Out. Another was someone snorting throughout the entire movie, Us, loudly. Okay, so snorting, I don't know. I don't mind when people are reacting to movies. That's fine for me. But let's talk about that other part there. There are two sides to that same coin, right? On the one side of the coin is the partner who feels the need to explain everything to their other partner throughout the entire movie. Now, you see that guy there? Yeah, that guy, he was also in this other show. And they see he's sneaky, though. He doesn't, and he's like trying to explain it to his partner, which I'm sure is making his partner very frustrated. However, the flip side of that coin is when you have like the wife or the other partner constantly asking questions through the whole movie. Why? Who's that guy again? Have we seen him yet? Why did he go over there? Is that a dog? That's a pretty, like, whatever. Both sides of those. Stereotypically, the husband trying to mansplain everything, or stereotypically, the girlfriend or the wife asking questions, although those roles can be completely reversed, is equally frustrating to me. It's like, dude, you don't have to give running commentary through the movie. Shut up. And listen, I don't mind people talking to the friends they've brought with throughout a movie here and there, as long as it's obvious they're making an effort to be as undisturbing as possible. Like, you know, I see people and they're talking to each other, they'll lean over and whisper in their ear. That doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me at all. But I mean, you're constantly talking through the whole thing, like explaining it to the person you're with or asking questions throughout the entire thing. Yes, that needs to stop. And those people need to go to, like, you know, when you get too many tickets, you're forced to go to a traffic school. If you do that too much in a movie, you should be forced to go to a movie theater etiquette class and get a certificate in order to be allowed back into movie theaters again. That's my pitch. All right. Thanks for that, Scott. Next up, we're at Jesse, who writes, my brother said something while watching Loki that made me wonder if they'll explain it or if it'll just be a trope. Why is it that everything is centered on Earth? The TVA isn't Earth exclusive. Why does bad Loki keep using the timeline of Earth events? Honestly, Jesse, I have two answers to that. The first one is the most important one, which is who cares? Why is that an issue? It shouldn't be an issue. The second answer to that is probably more of an audience engagement issue. You put it on Earth because that's what people are just going to connect to more. You know, they pop up in the 80s at a Renaissance fair. Audience connects with that. The audience sees it, goes, oh yeah, that, cool, you know, whatever. Pompeii, you know, the audience sees that. We know about the history of Pompeii. We know about the volcano. So yeah, there's a connection there. Plus, you get to use all human characters, which makes the show easier to make and less expensive to do. So, and really, the average audience is not sitting at home. The average audience member, the non-hardcore comic book geek or whatever, isn't sitting at home and going, wait a minute, why are they doing all these locations on Earth? I mean, they're not asking that question. So, number one, who cares? Number two, I think it's an audience engagement thing. I just think it makes it an easier story for the average audience member to watch and engage with. And that's kind of my take on it, though. So if your friend asks you again, that's what I would say to him. All right. Thanks for that, man. All right. Next up, we've got Scott Brown, who writes, if you like Warrior on HBO Max, then I really think you would love Gangs of London. It has the best action I've ever seen in a TV show. It's directed by Gareth Evans, I heard. All eight episodes were directed, once again, by Gareth Evans, and it's on AMC Plus with Prime Day deals. You can get 2 months for $2. Again, I have no plans on signing up for another subscription service. It doesn't matter if it's 10 cents. Because eventually I'll forget that I'm subscribed to it, and then they'll charge me the full price and whatever. But I've heard good things. I've heard good things about it. I highly doubt the action's as good as it is in Warrior. Now, I can't say that for sure because I haven't watched it, right? But I have a hard time imagining the action's as good as it is in Warrior. I mean, God, that show is so good. I know you've heard me say it before, but I finally got turned on to Warrior because, you know, Dennis constantly talks about it on social media. And then I had a number of you guys writing in to tell me about it. And so started watching it. I binged both seasons in 3 days. I couldn't stop. And even once I was rounding into season two, I ended up staying up till 4 in the morning just so I could finish it out. I mean, it was that addictive and that good. And I don't know. If the opportunity ever avails itself without me needing to subscribe to yet another streaming service to watch it, I may check it out because I've been getting a number of people, Scott, writing in saying I should check it out. But until it is on something I'm already subscribed to, I'm probably going to take a pass. But I bet sooner or later it'll pop up on something. All right. Thanks for sharing that, Scott. Appreciate it. Next up, Werder writes, "Hey, John, just curious, but have you finished Mayor of Easttown?" Oh, I did. "Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks, and let the filthy be brought." All right, thanks a lot for writing that in. And yeah, listen, I was a little bit late to Mayor of Easttown. I was a little bit late to it. Like, I started watching it when I think the second to last episode was coming out, and didn't get caught up on it until after the finale aired. I had a bunch of people writing into me and saying, "You should really check it out. It's the best performance Kate Winslet's ever get." And I'm like, okay, hold on, everybody. Slow your roll a bit. Kate Winslet is a multi-time Oscar-nominated actress, whatever. But you know what? I finally started watching it. Oh, my God. It is the best work she's ever done. It is her best acting of her career. This show is fantastic. And you just get, by the way, I don't know the name of the actress who plays her best friend in the show. The character's name is Lore. I guess that's short for Lori, but her best friend in the show, her name is Lore. And I don't know the name of the actress off the top of my head, but if you're one of the members of the Emmy, you know, committee, just take the Emmy, put it into a nice UPS box and just ship it to her now. And just don't waste anybody's time at the next Emmys. She's going to win. At least at this point, it's hard to imagine her not winning. And by the way, Kate Winslet very well could win the Emmy for Best Actress. The show could probably win for Best Drama. It's fantastic. Now, if you haven't started watching it yet, understand the first episode is just all set up. It's introducing you to the community. It's introducing you to the backstory. And it's introducing you to the characters. And then episode one ends with the flashpoint, the event that will set the rest of this series into motion. But the first episode is just introducing everything. And it's good. It's good. But man, once you get into episode two, I just couldn't stop watching it. It's so good. Go and check out Mayor of Easttown if you have not started doing so yet. All right. Teddy Holiday writes, "Hey, John, is it just me or is Lady Loki the worst misdirected yet? I personally didn't suspect anything after watching episode two, but as soon as I hopped online, it seemed like literally everyone was immediately knew it was Enchantress. Kind of made me feel stupid." Well, I mean, there's two things to say about that, Teddy, and I've mentioned this before. Number one, ain't nobody knows that she's Enchantress. She very well may not be. I mean, I suspect she is, but for different reasons, but it very well could be Lady Loki or somebody else. We don't know it's Enchantress. So there's that. Second thing is, let's say it is Enchantress. 90%+ of people who are watching Loki have never heard of Enchantress. That's the problem with our fan community sometimes, is that, like, you and I will hang out in these online fan communities so much that we just assume that everybody is talking about the same things we are. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Yeah, we're talking, just like when it was Agatha, right? I said, I don't believe that's Agatha, but it did turn out to be Agatha. But still, even though a bunch of people did know it was Agatha, the fact of the matter is 90%+ of people out there watching WandaVision never even heard of Agatha. So when the Agatha reveal happened to them, it caught, for 90% of the audience, it caught them as a shock because they have never even heard of this Agatha character before. Whereas some of us who travel in certain circles, we did know. But so number one, we absolutely don't know if that's Enchantress. And number two, even if it is Enchantress, it's not the biggest misdirect because 90%+ of the audience never even heard of this character anyway. So, and don't travel in our, and don't hang out in our online communities. So it really won't make a difference. But I'm leaning towards it being Enchantress, but again, we do not know if that's actually the case. All right, next up, we've got Raymond Reddington, who writes, "Hey, John and Rob," obviously Rob's not here right now, "love the show, thank you, sir. As it seems like we are going to finally know who Raymond Reddington actually is in season 8 finale, just wanted to know what your theory is on who he is. I think he is Katerina. And Rob, Wednesdays are the new Fridays. Well, of course, we are heading into the last two episodes of season 8 of The Blacklist, which is a show I have been watching ever since it debuted in season 1 because I'm a big James Spader fan. And the concept of the show is really quite good. Now, season 8, only two episodes left, and they just officially announced that the actress Boone, who plays Agent Keane, the other main character, so James Spader is Raymond Reddington, the lead main character, and then you have Boone, who plays the second, Agent Keane, plays the second most major character in the show. Really, the show's been about the two of them. And she is leaving after these next two episodes. She's not going to be back for season 9. So they're wrapping up this storyline that has been running for 8 seasons, and some big reveals are coming. What is the big secret Raymond's been keeping, and who is the true identity of Raymond Reddington? Now, my theory, which I am, it's just very, very loose theory. I have really no confidence in this theory. This is just my guess. I'm guessing he is her dad. Now, I know they've already done the whole thing where they told you for a long time they thought he was her dad, and then they proved he wasn't her dad. I've got a feeling that was yet just another misdirect, and my guess is right now it's going to turn out he is indeed Keane's father. Now, again, I wouldn't put any money on that. Anything can happen in these last two episodes, but I am going to miss Agent Keane, and normally I would say shows like this that lose, like, the co-lead of the show, you should just end the show, but the Raymond Reddington character is such a strong character portrayed by James Spader. I think this is a show that can go on even without Keane. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go with season 9. All right. Thanks a lot for that, Raymond. Next up, Ro Jorgen writes in, one of two. Hello, John. Hello, Mr. Campia from Windsor, Ontario. I love Windsor, Ontario. Recent fan here and hooked ever since I saw the YouTube clip of you flipping out on your headphones. Yeah, they still hang over there. The broken headphones still hang over there as a warning to all my other technology to not break down on me or for things to go wrong. Anyway, here's a quick list of spots you may have missed on Loki that were time-effed. Sakaar, Vormir, Asgard, Ego, Titan, and Hala all seem like major MCU settings. Do you think instead of time reset, she created a separate timeline on each one? And one more random question. Do you like the movie Fifth Element? Think it could ever be rebooted? All right, I'll address that one just really quickly first. I like Fifth Element. I don't think it's one of the great sci-fi movies like some of my friends do. I know some people that just love Fifth Element, right? Love, 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 love. And I've always liked it, but not much more than that. I like it. It's a good movie, but I don't think it's, you know, all-time classic or anything like that. Yeah, you could easily reboot it, I suppose. But getting back to that, here's the thing. You got to remember that the variant, whether it's Enchantress or Lady Loki or whatever, she didn't just send out 6 or 7 of these things. She sent out tons of these things. And I think that board that came up that showed locations, I don't think there's any real significance to that. I think that was just a nice little Easter egg to throw some names up there that people like us, the audience, that if we caught it, we would recognize the names. But remember, it's not, if they only sent out like 5 or 6, then maybe those names would be relevant. It's like, well, why Vormir? And why Sakaar? You know, but the reality is there were tons of them that she sent out. Tons of them. Which led me to believe they're really practically going everywhere. Not literally, but I'm just, you know, they're going all over the place. So I don't know, nor do I think that there's any real relevance to that other than they just went everywhere. But I don't know. Again, it's one of those things where we've only seen 2 episodes. The upcoming episodes may shed more light, and I may change my thoughts on that, obviously, which is what we do when we get new information. But yeah, right now I think it was just a pleasant Easter egg to put on the board. I don't know that it had any relevance, but we'll find out. We'll find out. Thanks for writing that in, Joe. All right, next up. Rose Twins 2x2 writes, hey, John, former MoviePass user, my condolences. Former MoviePass user, I thought I'd share. Many a time a few go to theaters in Georgia. Please proofread. The card actually authorized for like $17. So if I bought tickets at the counter and snacks, the card converted covered both. Always felt it would be short-lived. Cheers. Really? That shouldn't work. That should, and here's why that shouldn't have ever worked. Okay, so for those of you who don't know how MoviePass worked, I don't have a wallet here, but let's say this remote control was a credit card, okay? When you joined MoviePass, for those of you who are never members, you had a MoviePass card. Now, what the card really was, it was just a MasterCard. It was literally a MasterCard with a MoviePass, you know, logo on it. And the way the card worked was this. It was connected to your MoviePass account. Now, when you would use the app on your phone to say, I'm going to the AMC Burbank 16 Theater to see, Light Between Oceans, the Michael Fassbender movie. Terrible movie, by the way. But I'm going to go see Light Between Oceans at the AMC Burbank 16 on Thursday at 6 p.m. Okay. What the app now knows is that at the AMC Burbank 16 on that night at 6 p.m. for a screening of Light Between Oceans, the ticket price is $15.50. What it then did was automatically credit $15.50 to that Visa or to that MasterCard MoviePass card. So then you would go to the theater, go to the kiosk, and just buy your ticket as normal, except instead of using your regular bank debit card, you would use that MasterCard, that MoviePass card, because it automatically had $15.50 on it, and it would buy, you could buy the ticket with the funds that were available on that MasterCard, right? Since that's how it works, it should have had the exact amount of money for purchasing the ticket. There shouldn't have been money or available usage of it to buy concessions. So maybe it was just a fluke, like a glitch that worked on yours. Actually, I don't know. I'm curious for any of you guys who were MoviePass members, did any of you have that kind of experience? I'd be really interested to know if you did. So all I can say, Rose, is it seems like it must have been some kind of a fluky glitch on your account because it shouldn't have worked. But I do want to know, did more of you experience that? Please write down in the comments section. I would honestly love to know. Thanks for sharing your experience, Rose. Okay, next up. Tron writes, where are we at here? Tron, there are rumors that DC is going to announce delays of some films at DC Fandom. Do you know if this is true? And if so, why would they announce delays at a fan event when the point of it is to get people excited for the films? I don't get it. Okay, so Tron, here's the first thing I would say to this. And you guys know my philosophy on this. I guarantee you that information did not come from Variety, The Wrap, The Hollywood Reporter, or Deadline, or Entertainment Weekly, or whatever. It didn't come from any of the legitimate trades. If you don't get information, or if you can't find that information on the legitimate trades, ignore it. Just ignore it. It is 99% untrue. Look, it is possible, and it has happened, where information breaks on one of the non-major trades, and it turns out to be true. But even in that 1% of the time, 99% of that, it'll eventually show up on the major trades within a day or two as well, right? Because they're the ones with the real inside sources and real connections and real long-term relationships, and they can get that information with a phone call. So if you don't see it pop up on Variety or Deadline or the Hollywood Reporter, 99%, not 100%, but 99% chance that it's just not true. And if it is true, it eventually will be on those sites. So if you're wherever you're hearing that rumor from, I wouldn't pay any attention to it. The other thing is this. You're exactly right, Tron. DC Fandom and events like it are meant to hype up things and to celebrate and to be a feel-good, mental Viagra kind of get a stiffy just thinking about it kind of event. They don't want to break downer news at these things. Hey, guys. You know that Batman movie with Matt Reeves we've all been excited about? Yeah, we're pushing it another 6 months. You don't announce that at DC Fandom. If you are delaying some of these projects, you drop a press release months before DC Fandom. You get the bad news out there first. So that by the time you get to DC Fandom, you're just talking about, woohoo, can't wait for the Batman to come out on whatever the new date is. You don't drop downer news at DC Fandom. That is an event meant to hype people up. You don't drop downers. You drop it well in advance. So again, maybe there's some validity to the report. I doubt it. But if there is, there's no way DC uses DC fandom to drop downer news on people. I just don't see that happening. So that's my take on it. All right. Thanks for writing in, Tron. All right. Next up, Rose Twins 2x2 writes, "Hey guys, with your unique background in studies, like with the cloth and law, of course, because I used to go to seminary and I used to work in law and life. Can the TVA be an all good entity if they allow horrific atrocities to occur? Being aware of it, i.e. genocide, are they perhaps complicit? I think this could be a good theme, be a theme going forward." Well, I mean, look, I'll tell you what. This goes back to a lot of debates that would happen around the seminary, right? And in religious circles as well. But I think it's good to apply it to, I think we can apply it to the TVA here as well. The old debate would go like this. If God is all good, then how can he allow bad things to happen? Right? That's reducing it down, but that's the basic gist of it is. Here's what my position on that always was, and then how I think it applies to the TVA. If a guy decides to drink heavily and then get in his car and drive and smashes into a really nice, you know, grandmother and kills her, it wasn't God that did that. That was the asshole who decided it was cool to drink and drive. By the way, just a little thing, if you drink and drive, there's no gray here. You're a fucking asshole. Can I just say that? If you drink and drive, you're a fucking asshole. And if you just got offended by what I said, get the fuck out of here. I don't want you as one of my audience members because you're an asshole. Anyway, that being said, that wasn't God who chose to do that. That was the asshole who decided to do that. Now, you could then say, well, isn't God then complicit for not stopping that person? And here's the rub. If God were to do that, that's taking away free will. And nothing in life has any meaning if it's not navigated by free will. So in seminary, we would talk about that, you know, God would give, you know, wisdom for life and guidance for life, but it's still up to people if they want to be jerks or not. It's still up to individual choice. And the reality is we as human beings can make the choice to hurt each other. And we often do. Bono, the lead singer of U2, once said a quote that was one of my favorite for long times. He said, "We have enough food on this planet to feed everybody four times over. Don't blame God that we don't share it around." I mean, it's just a dumb musician making some observation about life, but it's actually pretty wise words. Now let's transpose that to the TVA. If the TVA is as they've presented it so far in Loki, and remember, we may find out in the next four episodes that the TVA is not as it seems in Loki so far. But for now, let's say that the TVA is as it seems, okay? I think people misunderstand the timekeepers. I don't think the timekeepers are writing everybody's destiny. If that was the case, then variance would never exist. If the TVA were actually writing out destiny, then Mobius wouldn't need to try to convince Loki to cooperate. He could just go to Ravonna and say, "Hey, tell the timekeepers to write Loki's destiny that he just cooperates, please." No. They know the timeline. The timekeepers know what's going to happen between here and there, but they don't take away life's free choice or free will. It's still up to sentient beings to make choices and make decisions, to decide what they will and won't do. And yes, if some make decisions that are going to harm other people, it's not their place to take that free will away from them. So that would be my take on that. Now, again, like we were saying before with the other question that came in, we've only got two episodes of the show so far. There's a lot more information to come, and maybe as we get more information about the TVA, what's really going on behind the scenes there, we'll change our opinion, we'll change our answers. But that's my take on that right now. That, no, the TVA is not complicit because it's not their place to take away the free will of beings in the reality they govern. So anyway, that's kind of my take. I don't know, a little bit heady for a conversation like this, but that's where I'm at right now, Rose. Thanks for writing in. Okay, next up, Florian Stumpf writes, greetings from Germany. Greetings, Florian. I just wanted to tell you guys that I got my vaccine shot today. Congratulations, dude. Thought I'd have to wait a few more months. Stay safe, everyone. Listen, Florian, that is great. Because you know what? I think people like me take it for granted because I live in the United States right now. I live in California, United States, and COVID rates have been dropping like crazy. Tons of people getting vaccinated, well over half the population here. I think we're getting closing in on 3/4 of the population here in California has got vaccinated, if I'm not mistaken. The new case numbers are dropping like crazy. I was just able to do a real normal thing for the first time in a long time. I just went to Vegas this weekend, first time in over a year. Fantastic, fun experience. But I think living in this situation makes me take for granted and forget that there's a lot of other places in the world that have not been able to get enough vaccines, that the COVID problem is only getting worse, and all that kind of stuff. So the fact that you were able to get your vaccine, man, that is awesome. Thank you for sharing that good news, Florian. And I hope you're able to get back as quickly as possible to what normal is as quickly as possible as well. And congratulations, man. That's awesome. All right, next up. Ethan writes, hey, John, since we are getting a Simpsons movie 2, maybe. Since we are getting a Simpsons movie 2, do you think we will ever see a Futurama movie on the big screen? Okay, so first of all, yeah, I read the news that they're developing a Simpsons movie 2. That doesn't automatically mean we will get it. So we probably will at some point, probably once they decide to end the Simpsons on TV, they'll probably do Simpsons movie 2. Do I think that means we'll get a Futurama? No, I don't. I mean, if we're talking about legit, full theatrical, full motion picture treatment, I don't think so. Maybe like a straight to Disney Plus special or something like that, you know, something cute, but a real full theatrical film of Futurama? No, I don't think so. And the main reason for that is this, simply not enough people watched it. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that I don't even think 15% of people who watch Simpsons watch Futurama. And I know friends who are like diehard Simpsons fans, like back in the day when Futurama was around and doing it, that I knew friends that I had friends that would just love Simpsons. And even though it was made by the same guy, never bothered with Futurama. It had nowhere near the audience or pop cultural impact that The Simpsons did. So while I would be all about a movie about the adventures of Zap Brannigan, I send wave after wave of my own men until the kill bots hit their kill limit. One of the greatest characters ever in animation, Zap Brannigan. Well, I would be all down for it, personally. I don't see them doing it. Again, maybe some cute little Disney Plus special release, but like a full theatrical, real motion picture, kind of doubt. I just don't think it has the following, but that's me. And maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? All right, next up, we've got Cody Hunt Films, who writes, I find it interesting that all of the agents in the TVA are humanoids. Why would space lizards model their workers in human form? The Skrull in episode 1 was a variant. Makes me believe that the timekeepers are symbols for something else. Well, you know what, Cody? This goes back to the same question that somebody asked a little bit earlier about why is all the things on kind of Earth-level events. I honestly believe it doesn't matter. Now, Rob and I talked about this a little bit earlier today on the John Campus Show, and we gave two different answers, and I think they're both good. My answer was, I think it's just the reason why most sci-fi films have always had human or very, very humanoid looking aliens, because it's easier. It's cheaper. The audience relates with it better. Like then rather than seeing a bunch of squid creatures going around, the average audience member at home who's just flipping through TV isn't a hardcore comics fan, but here's Loki's pretty fun. They're going to attach to it more if they, you know, kind of see the setting that they designed. It's great. It's easier. It's cheaper. And, you know, the audience just connects with it better. Rob also had a really good answer today when he suggested that he thinks that you see TVA agents as whatever species you are. So if the TVA had to go and take care of a variant on a gerbil planet, a sentient gerbil planet, then the gerbil citizens there would see the TVA as their fellow gerbils. Now, there's nothing in the show that has suggested that's the case, but I like that theory. That's a pretty good theory, too. That you see the TVA as being whatever species you are. I think that was a very good answer. So I like both of our answers to that. Ultimately, like the locations answer, I also think it's a who cares kind of thing. I don't know that there's actually any relevance to it, but it's something to keep in mind. But again, only two episodes in, we might get more information down the line. So we'll see. You could be right on the money, Cody. All right, next up, we've got Matt Bailey who writes, John, I'm confused by the second episode of Loki. They said that Lady Loki was hiding in Doomsdays to cover her tracks, yes. But the events they've shown where she attacked weren't all Doomsdays, 1958 Oklahoma, or 1858 Oklahoma, 1985 Oshkosh, 1549 France. Please explain. Okay, this one's fairly straightforward and easy. All the places you just mentioned were not in Armageddon events. And that is why when... let's call the Lady Loki or Enchantress. Let's just call them the Variant for now. When the variant set traps there and set ambushes there, the TVA knew about it because they could detect the variants there. And the reason they could detect a variant there is because that's not an Armageddon event. So the Variant would go there, do their attacks, do her ambushes, and then retreat to an Armageddon event, because there at Armageddon events, what Loki figured out was that the TVA cannot detect variations at an Armageddon event because everybody in that event are going to die. So there can be no ripples, no repercussions of anything. Loki could show up at Pompeii, say, hello, everybody. I'm a god from Asgard and I'm from the future and you're all going to die. But the TVA couldn't detect any variances because it wouldn't have any impact, because they're all about to die anyway. The little girl hearing Loki say all that can't go to the next town and tell some people and then tell them some people. And now all of a sudden you've got a Nexus event. It didn't matter because everything's about to end. So those places that you listed is where the variant would go to plan attacks, and the TVA could detect the variant there. But they can't detect the variant after she's done her attack. She goes back to an Armageddon event where she's hiding out, because since it's an Armageddon event, the TVA cannot detect any variants there. So anyway, I hope I made that a little bit clear. I may not have explained it well, but I hope I made that a little bit more clear. Thanks for writing that in, Matt. All right, next up, we've got Jody Harkavy. And Jody Harkavy writes, yesterday you said Lady Loki was not, so because... Let me try this again. Yesterday you said Lady Loki was not so because would have to be born from birth, but comics have Loki dying in Ragnarok. Comics are the comics. The TV shows are completely different things. Anyway, has Loki dying in Ragnarok and then going into a female body. So it may be improbable, but is possible. Love the show. Keep up the good work and bring on the filthy. Thank you for that, Jody. Now, look, just to be clear, I did not say, I said basically what you just said. I did not say it's absolutely, fundamentally impossible that that is Lady Loki, a variant of Loki, because she would have been a variant from birth and therefore the TVA would have recognized the variants right from the beginning. Blah. I didn't say it's absolutely impossible. I said it's difficult to navigate that. It makes it improbable. It creates, there's a problem. There's a logic problem there with that, right? But it is, and let's be honest here, this is comic book material. And like you just said, improbable. Kevin Feige and his team can write anything they want. Kevin Feige can say, yeah, that Loki variant was totally just regular Loki. And then the Wizard of Oz showed up and sprinkled some magic dust on that Loki's head, and he turned into a female Loki. Literally, they could do that if they wanted to. It is comic book material. They can come up with anything. So I didn't say it's impossible. It's just, it's problematic. That's all I meant. It's problematic. And we've seen Kevin Feige and his team of writers and directors and generals navigate the problematic before. It's kind of what they do. So I wouldn't doubt it if they did it again. All right. Thanks for writing that in, Jody. All right. Next up, we got Andy S. who writes, I'm amazed of the Loki director, probably mean by. I'm amazed by the Loki director. The pacing of the movie seems spot on, for the show at least. For the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I personally felt it dragged a bit at moments. I gotta disagree with you, Andy. I never felt like the show dragged. I never thought Falcon and the Winter Soldier dragged. Now, there were episodes that I didn't think were as good as the others, but I didn't think that was an issue of pacing. I thought the pacing in Falcon and Winter Soldier was pretty good. Now, look, I liked the first three episodes of Falcon and Winter Soldier. I didn't think they were awesome. It wasn't until episode four that I thought it really started to sing, that it really kicked it into gear, was right around episode four. And that's where it really started to heat up. But again, even though I didn't love the first three episodes, I liked them. I enjoyed them. But it wasn't pacing. I thought the pacing was good. But anyway, that's just me. Thanks for sharing your perspective on it, though, Andy. I appreciate that, man. All right. But yes, the director of Loki and you know, the person writing it, who's also the same person that's writing Doctor Strange 2, the same person who's writing Kevin Feige's Star Wars film that's coming up. I mean, doing a great job so far. So let's see how it continues to evolve, Andy. Thanks for sending that in. Next up, Bojax writes, "Hey, John. You've been getting a lot of recommendations to watch Lupin lately, Kimberly Curran says, Lupin. I don't know the proper pronunciation. I don't know if it's Lupin or Lupin. I don't know what it is. Anyway, and while I haven't seen it myself, I think, like me, you'll recognize the main lead. I do. It's Omar Sy. His name is Omar Sy, and he played Bishop in X-Men Days of Future Past. Yeah, listen, this Lupin thing, I cannot believe this, because everybody's talking about how excited they are that season two of Lupin is coming. I'm saying Lupin for now. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced. I never even heard of it. I never heard of this show. And then one day, you know, across my newsfeed comes Lupin season two preview. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I never even heard that. And I watched the preview, and all of a sudden I'm seeing everybody talking about, oh, I cannot wait to watch season two of Lupin. I'm like, wait, has everybody known about this show all along? Am I the only one who's not known about Lupin or whatever it is you call it? I've never heard of it until this. So at some point, Bojax, at some point, I think you and I both, brother, I think we're going to have to check it out, because a lot of people are swearing by it. Especially, I was talking to Kimberly Curran about it, and she like really likes this show. So I might have to check it out myself. Anyway, thanks for writing that in, man. Next up, Jesse writes, "If any hero should go down, it's Batman. I mean, with those ears, the guy literally put handles on his head." Dude, I said that exact same thing the other day on the show. I literally said that exact same thing on the show. It's like the ears on the cow is literally handles for a woman to hold on to as he goes down. It's totally right there. All right, next up, Jesse also writes, "Sorry about the bad joke, John. I sent that in literally right before you say it yourself." Okay, so you did see me say it on the show. There you go. All right, thanks for following up with that, Jesse. I appreciate it. Okay, next up, Ishmael Montoya writes, "Hey, John. Was it me or in episode one of Loki, minute 34:15, was it Peggy Carter being arrested by the TVA? I don't think so. I've seen that floated all over the place on the internet. I don't, honestly, it's a woman who looks like she's dressed from that era. I didn't see it at all. I didn't see it at all. I mean, I've seen the frames that people screen captured and shared. And if you want to believe that's Peggy Carter, go ahead and believe it's Peggy Carter. It doesn't matter. But I honestly, no, not me. I didn't think it was. I still don't think it was. But there are a bunch of people out there who swear by it. And ultimately, it doesn't matter. So one of these days, the people behind Loki will come out and say, yes, that was Peggy Carter, by the way. We created a little backstory. And okay, great. But until that happens, I don't actually think it was Peggy Carter. But that's just me. All right, next up. Wes Maurer writes, "John, just had an idea for a Marvel Disney Plus show." Probably meant Marvel. A show about marbles on Disney Plus. Yay, I get the green one. Anyway, would love your input. Agent Jimmy Woo and Darcy in the X-Files type show, but instead of uncovering extraterrestrials, they're uncovering different mutant phenomena. Dude, Wes, I've been saying, take out the X-Men mutants nonsense. Take that out. I've been saying that exact same thing ever since they showed up. Well, when did they show up? Episode 3 of WandaVision? Episode 3 or episode 4? Anyway, ever since they showed up, ever since Darcy and Jimmy showed up in that, I've been saying, give me a Marvel's X-Files show with Darcy and Jimmy. And they are sent and go around and investigate unexplainable phenomena. Like, not aliens like X-Files, but I mean, it can be aliens, I suppose. But I've been saying that forever, Wes. Now, I don't No, I don't think that's how you bring in X-Men or mutants. I don't think that at all. But that concept for a show, I've been saying it for months, dude. You and me and a lot of other people have been saying that one for months. So I'm all on board with it, Wes. I am all on board for that. I still want it. All right, Diego writes, can we talk about how good the shows on Apple TV are? Ted Lasso, hilarious. The Morning Show, fantastic. Defending Jacob, which I still never seen yet. Amazing. Oh, and their movies, Cherry and Greyhound, incredible. Really looking forward to what is next for them. I'll be honest with you. I did not think Cherry or Greyhound were all that good. And I say that as a massive Tom Holland fan. I say that as a massive Tom Hanks fan. I don't think either of those films were actually all of that good. I really don't. But let's talk about their TV. When Apple did their first, that big announcement event where they announced Apple TV Plus and they brought, you know, Jennifer Aniston on stage and they brought Jason Momoa on stage, I remember thinking, like, none of this looks interesting to me. And it didn't look interesting. It didn't at all. But then I saw Morning Show. I'm like, damn it, that is a good show. It's not for everybody, but I thought that was a really good show. And then my brother-in-law, Ray, who does, you know, all the images for the John Campia show, he was over at my place for a couple days, and he had this show, For All Mankind, which is an Apple Plus show. And I got hooked on it. I'm like, damn it, this show's good. And it was great. And then Ted Lasso is so fantastic. One of my favorite things going on TV right now is Ted Lasso. The one thing that I saw on Apple TV Plus that did not win for me was the Jason, and it's funny because I love Jason Momoa, but that C show that he did, S-E-E, C, I didn't think that was very good. But honestly, everything else, all the other shows I've seen, and I haven't even seen that Chris Evans one yet, and I'm dying to. But unfortunately for me, like, the movies, not so much so far. But I'm glad you're liking it, Diego. But yeah, listen, that's what I've been saying for a while. Apple TV Plus, with the money of Apple behind it, it's not going anywhere. And it's, I think in 5 years, it's going to be one of the top two or three major players. I really do. I really, really do. All right, next up, Jack Wallace writes, hey, John, it's my son Aiden's birthday on Friday. Well, today is Monday, so Friday we didn't do a show, so we're still getting caught up on that. So on Friday, June 18th, he turns 10. He's a budding photographer and an all-around great kid and loves both you and Rob. Oh, that's so nice for you to send in, Jack. So Aiden Wallace, happy birthday to you, my friend. I love the fact that you're a budding photographer. Get onto that photography stuff. I love good photography. I'm glad you're doing it. So happy birthday to you. Belated birthday to you. I hope you have had a wonderful birthday and you have a great year ahead of you. And thank your dad for that, because it was real nice of your dad to do that, man. All right. Thanks a lot for that, Jack. And I hope you did have a great birthday with your son. All right. Next up, Alvin J. Elmore writes, because of how fragmented the DCU has become, I think it's time for them to follow the ancient Chinese philosophy once held by another studio, which is continuity schmontinuity. Yeah, I used to joke, for those of you who know what Alvin's talking about, I used to joke, like, back in the X-Men day when the X-Men movies were being made by Fox, I used to say, in the hallowed halls of Fox Studios, chiseled into marble on one of the big main walls is the saying, continuity schmontinuity, because the X-Men films played very, very fast and loose with continuity. Like in one movie, Taylor Mayne was Sabretooth. And another one, you know, Ray Donovan is Sabretooth, and so on and so forth, right? They had no consistent continuity. One movie didn't care about the other ones and all that kind of stuff. So it was literally a continuity schmontinuity. And you know what? It worked for the most part. X-Men 1, X-Men 2, X-Men Days of Future Past, Logan, fantastic films. And pretty much continuity schmontinuity. I mean, there was certainly some continuity, but they also played very, very fast and loose with it. So it kind of worked for them. And you know what? I honestly don't care. I know there are a lot of people that are screaming and yelling that DC should do it the way Marvel does it. And I don't think that's the answer. I don't think there's any problem if they do. But I don't think it's like that's the one way to make good movies. No, just make good individual movies. I honestly don't give a shit about how they tie into other ones. When I go into a movie, I just want to enjoy and have a good movie. The reason the Marvel Cinematic Universe has worked, contrary to popular belief, is not their formula of standalone film, standalone film, standalone film, team, standalone, 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 team. That's not why. They're good because the movies are good. Notwithstanding Iron Man 2 and, you know, Thor Dark World, but the movies are good. People like the movies. They go into a movie, they have a fun, entertaining time. They come out of the theaters with big smiles on their faces, having had a great time. And that's why the MCU is popular. It's not the formula. It's that they've made really good movies. And the more and more that DC has changed their focus to just make good movies, you know, we've seen things starting to turn around. And I think they've made some fantastic movies. Like, obviously, Man of Steel, but you know, Aquaman was great. Shazam was fantastic. The first Wonder Woman was fantastic. Joker got nominated for Best Picture of the Academy Awards. I'm very excited to see, you know, Matt Reeves' The Batman. I'm very excited to see that. And they got some really cool things on. They you know, Andy Muschietti's directing The Flash. That could be very special. So, I mean, it's cool when the shared cinematic universe thing is cool, and there's definitely pros to it, but it's all pointless and irrelevant if you don't make the individual movies good. And that stands beyond the formulas. So, you know, we'll see. Continuity schmontinuity, my friend. All right, next up, Rama writes, have you watched any of the Euros? Italy have begun great. Listen, I wasn't interested in watch. I don't watch much soccer at all. I watch soccer when the World Cup comes around and Italy's playing. So I wasn't really all that keen on watching the Euros. But then, you know, Italy won a couple of games. Like, they're doing well. So then when they played their third game, I'm like, all right, I'll tune in. You know, Forza, you know, I got all excited. So I watched the last game. I'll watch the upcoming Italy games. They're doing pretty well. We'll see. All right, thanks for that, Rama. Next up, OK Willow writes. Okay, Willow. Just Willow writes, okay, just to be clear, when you said that a person's going to get spooned to death if they stand between you and a bowl of ice cream, I remember saying that, between you and a bowl of cookies and cream ice cream, you meant that they're going to get attacked by a spoon, right? Yes, yes. I am not saying that I will murder you by gently coming up behind you, putting my knees against the back of your knees, and wrapping my arms tenderly around your waist. No. I did not mean that kind of spooning, just in case there was any ambiguity, in case there was any confusion, in case there was any sort of misdirection there. To be very, very clear, when I said you are going to be killed by spooning, I meant beating you to death with a spoon and not anything else. So thank you, Willow. I appreciate you writing that in and making me clarify. All right, next up, we've got Ryan G, who writes, hey, John, I don't like how they're putting Disney Plus shows on Wednesdays now, because the night before is America's Got Talent and Superman and Lois. They should have just kept it on Fridays. That's my thoughts. Honestly, dude, who cares about America's Got Talent? I mean, you do, clearly, but not everybody watches America's Got Talent. And who cares about Superman and Lois? I mean, I watch Superman and Lois. Yeah, of course, but the majority of people in America do not watch Superman Lois. But the reality is this, any night of the week you put on this show, somebody could point, well, they shouldn't put it on this night because this show is on and this show is on that I like, right? I mean, it's just what it is. Look, they did the research. They looked at the technical aspects. Listen, Loki just debuted on Wednesday and it was the biggest debut of any of their shows yet. And it was on a Wednesday. So it worked. But here's the other reality is this. It doesn't matter. You can watch it whenever you want. Like, honestly, like Superman and Lois, for example, I just watch it whenever I'm available to watch it. You know, I don't watch it the night it comes out because I'm usually busy. I'll just watch it, you know, the next day or 2 days later when I have a chance to pop it on and watch it. I mean, that's usually when I watch it. So, I mean, for you, it's America's Got Talent and Superman and Lois. But the majority of Americans don't watch either of those. So they could put it on Thursday night, but then somebody complained, well, this show and this show is on that night. So it really doesn't matter. It's whatever works. And now look, did I prefer Fridays? Yeah, I preferred Fridays, but it hasn't been a problem and it's clearly working. So listen, We only prefer Fridays because that's what we got used to. We'll get used to Wednesdays and it'll be perfectly fine. I really don't think there's going to be a thing about it. So they obviously did a lot of thinking and they moved it for a reason. So I'm sure it'll be fine. All right. Thanks for sharing your thoughts, Ryan. Next up, we got Mike Russetta. And Mike Russetta writes, "Hey, John, cannot wait till the casino reopen here in the casinos reopen here in Ontario and hope you are enjoying Vegas. What is your favorite film set in Las Vegas?" Listen, I haven't gone to a lot of casinos in Vegas, but I would go and play a bunch of poker at like Niagara Casino, like the casinos in Niagara Falls. I used to go to Casino Rama in Rama, Ontario. I used to really like that casino a lot, but I would go and play poker at the ones in Niagara. Anyway, I had a fantastic weekend in Vegas. Ann and I went to Vegas for the first time in over a year. Now, I usually go 6, 7, 8 times a year to Vegas. Obviously, haven't been there in well over a year. So we went back for the first time this weekend, had a great time. And over the course of 3 nights, the first night of playing poker, I played poker 3 nights. The first night of playing poker, I walked away a little over $2,000 up. The second night of poker, I walked away a little over $1,000 up. And then the third night of poker, I started badly, like I just lost my $300 buy-in. So I bought in for another $300 and then walked away from the table with a little over $800. So a little over $200 up. I ended up close to $32, $33, $3,400 up. It was a really good run of poker playing in Vegas this weekend. That and Ann and Kaori went with me too. Got to go out and eat at a couple of really, really great places. Ann and Corey hung out at the pools at Caesar's Palace. They got to, you know, visit some people. It was a really good weekend. Had a great time. Obviously, in the history of film, there's a lot of films that take place around Vegas. I'm not saying this is the best one, but the one I have the most fun watching is Hangover. I mean, John, what about this? You know, the gangster one. And what about, yeah, I get it. But I just love that first Hangover movie so much. Not to mention, like, I also really love that one they did a few years ago with Michael Douglas and Robert De Niro and Kevin Kline and Morgan Freeman, Last Vegas. I love that movie too. But I would probably, I mean, maybe if I thought about it more, I'd change my mind. But I think my favorite one is Hangover. I think that would have to be my favorite one right now. But, you know, whatever. That's just me. All right, next up. Anton Riley writes, "Hey, John, since there have been a few questions about biopics showing up on the show, I just wanted to ask, did you know that a Bernie Mac biopic is in the works?" Yeah, I believe we talked about that. It's being produced by John Legend's production company. Also, hope you enjoyed Las Vegas. Yeah, that's an interesting... It was a curious one when I heard they were doing one on Bernie Mac. Because, like, Bernie Mac, while famous, was not, like, super famous. But I don't know anything about Bernie Mac's life. And therefore, like, his life story may be fascinating. I just don't know. So I think that's pretty interesting that they're doing that. And I haven't, obviously, not a lot has been announced about it yet, but I still think that's pretty interesting. And yes, I did have a fabulous, fabulous time in Vegas. Thank you for asking, my friend. I really appreciate that. And we'll keep our eyes open for any upcoming news, Anton, surrounding this thing, and we'll see how it develops. All right, thanks for writing that in, Anton. Next up, Lucas's Lost Advocate writes, "Come on, John. You've just been asked about when did movies begin to avoid opening credits, and you missed the obvious. It was Star Wars. There was even a controversy between Lucas and some guild about that. Isn't it? Huge fan. Thank you, John and team." Yes, but you can't say that something started something when the things that came after it never duplicated you. Right? So you can't say, I'm just going to make a scenario up here, right? You can't say that some guy in 1921 started the trend of guitar solos when nobody did guitar solos for 50 years after that guy did a guitar solo, right? You point to the one that did it and then everybody kind of went with it, right? And, you know, after Star Wars came out, I think that was like the first film for a lot of people that was whatever, but it didn't start the trend of movies going without opening credits. I don't think that happened for a long time after that. So yeah, it was there, but I don't think you can credit Star Wars with starting the trend. I think it was a really unique circumstance that happened, but I don't think it's the one that started the trend. At least That's how I would interpret it at this point. But well pointed out, Lucas. Well pointed out. All right, next up. Guy Fox JLT writes, hey, John, when you accept the prequels are bad... Okay, when you accept the prequels are bad after Phantom Menace or later... I mean, for me, the prequels were... They were very unique for me because when I... You gotta understand, Star Wars is my life. And so when they were coming out with the Phantom Menace... And I was obviously a lot younger when The Phantom Menace was coming up, but I just couldn't believe they were doing another Star Wars movie. I was so psyched you wouldn't believe it. And so I went to see it and loved it. And then I saw it again and I loved it, but just not as much. And then I saw it again and thought, well, I didn't love it, but it's really, really good. And then I saw it again. It's like, well, it's really good. And then I saw it again. Well, it's good. Then I saw it again. It's like, well, it's okay. Okay. I did see Phantom Menace in theaters that many times. And then I just got to the point where I realized, oh God, this is really a terrible, terrible movie. This is a terrible movie. And I kind of had the same reaction with the following two. You know, I was just in a place. I hadn't really evolved yet as a film fan. I hadn't really, honed my tastes and stuff like that. And so again, I got fooled in with the second one too. I saw the second one. Okay, yeah, that was great. And then I saw it a couple more times. Like, who am I kidding? That wasn't great. That was god-awful garbage. And then it happened again. Now, I've never had that experience since with any other movies since. In decades. So it's kind of both. It was watching them, but not till a little bit later of watching them. And the closest experience I've had to something like that again was in reverse with Inglourious Basterds. The first time I saw Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds, I hated it. Like, straight up hated the movie. And then I watched it again a few months later on home video when it came out on DVD. I watched it again a few months later with a girl because I was on a date and she wanted to watch it. So whatever, we watched it. You know, watch what the girl wants to watch, right? And I loved it. I'm like, why did I not like this before? Like, was I just in a bad mood that day? Like, I just didn't know. But those are really the only two times that sort of thing has happened to me. And with the Star Wars prequels, that kind of falls under that one. Thanks a lot for asking, guy. All right, next up, Windwalker57 writes, Disney booking one of two. This isn't just a thing at amusement parks. Hotels and airlines have been overbooking for years. In fact, in hospitality college, it was taught a formula to calculate the likely rate of no-shows to know how much is safe to overbook. That's interesting. But when a hotel/airline overbooks and doesn't get no-shows, they are required by law to provide the service, even if they have to book a more expensive flight or hotel. Theme parks should have a law like that to keep them honest. All right, so what Windwalker is discussing is something we've talked about the last couple of days. Of course, Ann and I last weekend, not this past one, but the one before that, for our anniversary, went to Disneyland. Primarily went because we wanted to experience two of their features that they advertise heavily and market about the park. That is the Rise of the Resistance and the brand new Web Slinger as a part of Avengers Campus. They've been advertising the hell out of them. And so we thought, for our anniversary, let's go Disneyland so we can experience these two features. Now, we understand that there's a digital queue system, that at 7 a.m. you have to be on your app and register a spot on the ride that day. So sure enough, Ann and I wake up at 7 a.m. Well, we woke up at 6:45, and it's, you know, 6:58, we started refreshing the app. Okay, can't register yet, can't register at, and then literally like on the second at 7 a.m., boom, you can register your spot. Great, register. All booked. In 1 second, the entire thing was booked, which meant half of the reason we came to Disneyland, we weren't going to get to experience. We paid 50. Now, this is our choice because we were out for our anniversary, but we spent $1,500 on hotel and the two park hopper tickets because they don't let you have annual passes anymore. So we could experience that. And right there, we were out of luck. Okay. So then we get in the queue that one was for the Web Slinger. So then we decide we'll do the queue for Rise of Resistance. That queue opens at noon. The queue for that opens at noon. Okay, same thing. 11:58, start refreshing, can't register yet. And then 12 noon hits, boom, register your, for your spot, get in the digital queue for, right, great, let's do it, boom. Sold out in 1 second. Booked in 1 second. So we didn't get to do either of the things that we went there for. So we thought, now we were still in the hotel at Disneyland. So we hadn't gone into the parks yet. So we thought, okay, let's cancel our tickets, either get a refund or let's reschedule our tickets for another day so we can get those rides. But guess what? You have to get a refund 24 hours in advance, which means by the time you get to Disneyland and find out you can't get on the attractions you went there for, it's too late to get a refund. That is a fucking scam. That's a scam. And I mentioned this on a previous video, but can you imagine if movie theaters acted that way? Can you imagine if movie theaters functioned that way? If movie theaters advertise, come to AMC Theaters and see Avengers. We've got Avengers Endgame. Come and experience Avengers Endgame. But the way movie theaters worked, imagine if this is how they worked, that you didn't buy a ticket for a specific movie. You bought a ticket just to get into the theater. And there's like 10 different movies playing at the theater, but your ticket got you into the theater. And so you buy your $20 ticket to go to the theater next Saturday, and you show up and they say, oh, sorry, but the screen that's showing Endgame's all full, so you don't get to see Endgame. But that's why I came here. And then they say to you, oh yeah, but there's lots of other movies playing. Like, go watch In the Heights, which is really good, by the way. In the Heights is awesome. But, I mean, go watch In the Heights, or, you know, go watch Mortal Kombat, or go watch, you know, some drama or some horror movie, but that's not why I came. I came because you advertised, come to AMC Theaters and watch Endgame. And now I paid the money, I got here, and I can't see it? Okay, can I get a refund? Nope, sorry, too late for you to get a refund. You would have needed to get a refund 24 hours ago. But 24 hours ago, there was no way for me to know if I was going to be able to get in to watch Endgame or not. Yep, too bad. If movie theaters functioned like that, we would never accept it. We would never make excuses for it. And I've gotten so tired over the past week of hearing these lame sheep making excuses for Disneyland functioning like that. There is no reason, and I'll keep this short because I know I've ranted about this already, but there is no reason. It is the simplest, easiest thing for them to build into their app, that when you want to buy your tickets to go to Disneyland, you can then register your place in line or in the digital queue. That way, if I want to go next Saturday and I want to buy Disneyland tickets, but I see that the digital queue for Rise of the Resistance is already booked up, okay, now I know, and I can choose, instead of spending all my money in my vacation days on that time going to the park, I'll pick another time when I can get into the digital queue. Because Disney doesn't care if you get to experience the attractions you're going there for. They just want your money. They don't want you to know in advance if you're actually going to be able to get on the attractions you want to get on. Because, like, hey, listen, if that family can only, their vacation is these days, we don't want them to pick something else for their vacation. We want them to come to Disneyland. So don't let them know. Don't let them know if they're going to be able to get on the attractions they want to get on. Keep that part hidden from them. Because if family has vacations booked for these dates and they find out they can't get on their attraction that day, they're going to go somewhere else for their vacation. And we want their money. And I've been watching all these sheep making all these excuses for Disneyland. All these excuses. But the reality is, if it was any other industry, we would never let them get away with it. If the movie theater industry operated that way, we would never let them get away with it. And like you said, yeah, like there's some overbookings happen. But when overbookings happen, airlines, things like that, they are required to compensate you. And I'd be fine with that. Like, if I got to Disneyland and find out, like, I had tickets for the day and I found out, oh my God, Rise of Resistance is completely booked. I can't get on it. And Disneyland said, no problem. You know what? Here's two vouchers to visit the park again next week. Then that would be fine. That I would have no problem with that. That would be perfectly fine. But see, airlines and other places, you know what happens when you go to an AMC theater and the projector goes out? Like, it's a fluke, but the projector goes out. Just like you go to the park and your favorite ride may be broken down. But you know what AMC does? And this happened once. I was in a movie once where, like, the projector broke down like halfway through a movie. So you know what happened? As we were leaving the theater, the managers were standing at the door of the theater as you came out, and they were handing out, number one, a free AMC movie pass to come back to the movies another time, and number two, a voucher for a free popcorn and soda. They made up for it. They compensated you if you couldn't get the experience that you paid for. And we expect that and demand it from every entertainment or service industry that we pay money to, but for some reason, the sheep want to give Disneyland a pass. And to me, it's mind-boggling. Like, all I hear in my head when I read these people writing responses, like defending Disney, ripping people off, all I hear is, bah, bah. That's all I hear. That's all I hear. And I'm a Disney fan. You know I'm no Disney hater. I'm a Disney fan. I'm a fan of Disneyland. I am. Ann and I have been season pass holders for like 7 years till they took away our season passes, of course. But when they create a system that doesn't allow you to know in advance if you're going to be able to experience an attraction that you specifically paid your money for, that we would never accept that behavior or those policies from any other company or any other industry, and then people want to defend them, all I hear is, bah, bah. That's all I hear. Sheep. That's all I hear. Sheep. I am a big fan of Disney, but you call crap when you smell crap. And that is crap. Because these same people are going to go, bah, no, Disney's fine. Bah. It's the same people doing that. If they had to pay $20 to go to a movie theater and didn't get to go into the movie they wanted to see, they wouldn't defend that movie theater, nor should they. Nor should they. They would demand that the movie theater make changes so people get what they pay for. They get the experience that you promised in your advertising, and they booked in advance and booked flights and hotels and brought their families along only to find out they didn't get to experience the things they were looking forward to. With no recourse, no compensation, no refunds, no accommodation, no recourse at all. And the Disney sheeps go, meh. It's okay, Disney. It's okay. You want me to bend over more? Here, let me give you some lube. Oh, you don't want to use lube? That's okay. Just give it to me. That's all I hear. That's all I hear. We would never accept that from any other industry. I said I was going to rant long. Can you tell I am still butthurt about this? Can you tell that I am still absolutely confoundly whining and crying and butthurt about that whole thing? I still totally am. I like to think, oh, I'm over it. It's cool. But then you open up the moon and I'm totally not over it yet. I'm totally not over it yet. Anyway, this is kind of my little take on it. Just kind of my little take on it. All right, next up. Anyway, NJA pronounced NJA. Oh, just NJA. Okay, NJA writes, I feel you're struggling more about Disneyland. I promise I won't rant again. I feel your struggle with Disneyland, but damn, $1,500. Americans dump that kind of money on a theme park. Well, let me address that in a second. Hey, if it's worth it to you, you go. I wouldn't pay that much, even if a private dance was included from Slave Leia, Rey, and Yoda. Don't judge me. Now, listen, the thing, and Ann and I have to, we paid nothing compared to what a lot of families pay. Because, you know, a lot of families, the thing is, Disneyland is not just a theme park. It is a full resort experience. You get the hotels, like a lot of people plan their entire family vacations for a year round. And it's not just, you know, two adults. It's like two adults, three kids, whatever. They will book their vacation days. They will fly across the country. They will get the hotels. And yeah, man, it adds up. And Ann and I don't do that every weekend, but it was our anniversary. So we felt, yeah, let's spend a little bit of money and go have a really good time. and we weren't able to get what we paid for. So that is what it is, NJA. It is what it is. All right, next up, Suthius writes, okay, guys, how exactly is it that those variants Mobius showed during the briefing are either completely different species or different persons altogether? I thought that a variant can only branch off from the main timeline, the sacred... Oh boy, this is one of nine. Okay, the sacred timeline. Hence, why this Loki is, even though a variant, is still the same frost giant slash Asgardian humanoid and not a different species. Surely, those other variants didn't become that way simply by veering off the timeline, right? Actually, they very well could have. Anyway, I think and believe that those are variants of different alternate realities of the main timeline Loki. I don't. From my understanding of the first two episodes, those multiple timelines that existed separately weren't all eliminated by the Keepers. No, but they were merged into one. Again, the same example I was saying. You have five shirts. You take the materials from those shirts and make one shirt. You now don't have five shirts. You have one shirt. Anyway, instead, they were consolidated into one timeline, the sacred timeline, which means that all those timelines live within the same timeline. I don't think that's what it means at all. And those timelines are different realities. I don't believe that. Again, we may find out in future episodes of Loki that you may very well be right. I'm saying right now, I don't believe that. Even though they might look different from the main timeline, they too follow the same events. For example, in a different timeline of a different reality, the exact same events of Endgame played out the same. But instead of it being the Avengers, the heroes are the X-Men. This is the only way in my head that explains why some of those variants of Loki were completely different species, not because of branched timelines being created, but because of different realities all living within the sacred timeline. And those different realities each have their own branch timelines, as well as would need pruning. So, pretty much, it's variant-ception instead of inception. I like that. Variants with variant timelines within the sacred timeline. It's just what we see. It's just what we've seen of the MCU. Seems to be the dominant timeline that the Keepers want to be seen. All of those other timelines are still there. It's just that they take a backseat with this whole sacred timeline that is told to us and perpetuated on the TVA. I love shows and movies with different timelines and different realities. I kind of don't, to be honest. But sometimes it can be confusing. I literally had to map out this thought process of mine down on paper first before potentially sounding like a moron. And you don't sound like a moron at all, Suthius. You don't. Not in the least, brother. I don't believe in that whole thing. Like, when you watch an opening thing, they didn't just bring order to all the different multiverses. They got rid of the multiverse. And remember, go back and watch Ms. Minutes. There she is right over there. There's, hi, Ms. Minutes. Go back and watch Ms. Minutes' presentation again. When a variant happens and a Nexus event occurs, that thing starts going up towards the red line. And if it hits the red line, what does it say happens? Multiverse. Why would they be worried about something that already existed? It doesn't exist right now. There's not multiverse. That's what they're trying to prevent. Because if multiverse occurs, then you're going to have a multiversal war. They'll all struggle for dominance like they described in the opening. Now, again, we could find out that the TVA is not as it appears. We could find out that that entire opening presentation by Ms. Minutes was all BS. We may find out that the Timekeepers or a Wizard of Oz situation was something and someone very different behind the curtains. But just assuming things are the way they appeared in the first two episodes, which they may not end up being, they made it explicitly clear that multiverse no longer exists. And the reason they deal with variants and Nexus events is to prevent it hitting the red line and then multiverse. That's their worst case scenario. So now look, with the Loki variants, who knows what deviation those individual variants took and what radical effects it could have had. Like the one with Loki winning the Tour de France, you know, instead of, you know, maybe Thor and Heimdall, instead of losing the bet to them and he had to go and rob the plane like DB Cooper, he decided, well, what if instead of to do that, what if I go like race in this ridiculous human bike race? Okay. And then he went and did that, but that made him a variant, I should say. Or maybe he took a formula of something he wasn't supposed to take and suddenly was looking like the Hulk, like he did in that one thing, or changed him into something else. Again, A lot of different various explanations. Now, again, Suthius, let me emphasize this. We could very well find out that you are absolutely right. We could find out that you are 100% right. And again, we will get more information in the upcoming episodes, in the upcoming episodes of Loki. But until I see something, new evidence that they could very well give us, I just think the first two episodes made it very clear that that's not the case. But again, we can't be definitive about that until we have all the information. And until we get to the last episode of Loki, we don't have all the information. So maybe I'm right. Maybe you're right. It's going to be fun that we find out together, though. Anyway, dude, thank you for writing out your thoughts in such a huge way and trying to make it as clear as possible. I appreciate it when somebody takes time and care into drafting out those things you send in. So thank you very much for that, man. I really appreciate that. Okay, let's keep going here. Just time for a couple more. Mike Press writes, what if someone like an AMC theater had a function where you could make a donation of a dollar and then give four suggestions of catalog movies you'd like to see in your local theater of choice? Well, listen, not long ago, it might have been AMC theaters. Maybe it was a different theater chain, but it wasn't that long ago. Again, I can't, maybe you guys can help me in the comments section. It wasn't that long ago that a theater chain, and maybe it was AMC, set it up so like next Saturday in Theater 5, we're going to either have Smokey and the Bandit, The Highlander, Godfather 3, or, you know, Six Pack, the great Kenny Rogers classic Six Pack. Vote now for which movie is going to play and then buy your tickets. It's not a bad idea. I really do think when you get these big multiplexes that have like 8 cinemas, 10 cinemas, whatever in them, I think there's money to be made by having one theater dedicated to catalog films and just really make a big deal out of it and send out notices to your subscribers and whatever. I think there's money to be made there. I like the system. I don't know if that theater that was doing it, whether it was AMC or somebody else, still does it. But I like the idea, Mike. I think more places should look into doing something like that because I love going to the movie theaters to watch older movies. I think it's great because you're getting to see something on the big screen that you probably haven't seen on the big screen in like years. So I love it. Anyway, right now for a theatrical experience, I'd like to see Interstellar, Terminator 2 Judgment Day, Jurassic Park, and Mission Impossible. Well, I haven't seen a re-release of Interstellar, but I know every once in a while, if just keep your eyes open around local theaters, I know they've done Jurassic Park once in a while. The original Mission Impossible is one I've not seen re-released. That'd be pretty cool. And I don't think I've seen a re-release of Terminator 2. You know what? I'm with you on that one, man. I would rush out to a theater to see Terminator 2 Judgment Day in the theaters again. I would totally be down for that. Absolutely, I would be. That's a good call. All right. Next up, and we'll make this the last one of the day, guys. This one comes to us from Owen, who writes, John, can I recommend the viewers to watch Tress? I don't know if it's pronounced Tresse or Trise. Anyway, we'll go with Trise on Netflix. This is the Filipino animated show that my wife Anne is watching. My wife is Filipino. So this is the Filipino anime on Netflix right now that my wife is really liking. The mythological monsters are fun and the aesthetic is very cool. It's like a cross between Constantine and Ghost in the Shell. I only saw about 5 minutes of it, to be honest. I guess I saw about 5 minutes of it, but it was pretty cool. What I saw was pretty cool. I might have to check it out. Now, my wife's been watching it because she kind of feels obligated to watch it, but at the same, she says she's really enjoying it. So I might have to check that one out myself. The one scene, I walked into one scene where it was like, there was a bunch of vampire-like monsters holding some kid, and this girl who's the hero of the show just walks in and just starts butchering all the vampires. It was pretty cool scene. I thought maybe if I have time, I'm going to have to sit down and watch this at some point. So anyway, put that one on your radar, guys. And I'm sure the producers of the show love Owen that you just recommended it. Okay, guys, that'll do it for this installment of the companion video. Thank you so much for joining me. Now, listen, guys, there are still more to come. We got Dakota and Ryan Lohner and Casey McNatt Do not worry. We will start off tomorrow's John Campus show. When we get to the live questions part, we will start off right where we left off here, and we will get all cut up here very, very quickly. But for now, guys, that'll do it for this installment of the Companion Videos. Thank you so much for being here. Special thank you to all you guys who sent in these live questions. Number one, because you gave us great fun things to talk about. But number two, you supported this channel as you did it, and all of us involved with the John Campus show. Thank you guys very, very much for your support. Okay, guys, remember to do the four main things. Stay smart, stay safe, take care of yourselves, and please take care of the people around you. That'll do it for me for now, guys. My name's John Campia, and until next time, my friends, bye-bye.